Hello and welcome to Two Peds in a Pod, the medical education podcast from the Children's Emergency Department in Derby. I'm your host again, Ian Lewins, one of the consultants here. And in this season finale Christmas festive special, I'm delighted to be joined all the way from Sydney by Dr. Andy Tagg. Hi Andy, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks Ian.
Excellent. So for those of you who don't know, Andy is one of the co-creators of the fantastic Don't Forget the Bubbles website. And we've spoken to Tessa, one of the co-creators, and it is the website that I recommend all my trainees and all my colleagues and myself to go and have a look at. So it's a real privilege to have you on, Andy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ian.
And of course, we're going to talk today about the recent paper that you've been involved in. Which has gone a bit viral, really, hasn't it?
that'd be one way of putting it, certainly.
So, for those people who are not aware of it, what was the paper about, and who came up with this idea?
So, the paper really was to look at transit time for small plastic objects. We know that coins are the most commonly ingested foreign bodies in children. And there's a lot of data from the 1980s about how long they take to pass. And I was researching a talk to give at the Royal Children's in Melbourne and found out the second most commonly swallowed item were little bits of plastic toy. And I couldn't find any data at all. So I thought, what sort of plastic toys would children swallow? And I recalled swallowing at least three or four bits of Lego myself as a small child. And my mum looking through, the contents of the toilet waiting for them to come out. So I thought, that would be a good idea for a paper. I wonder if I could convince anyone else to do it.
And being paediatricians, of course you could.
Exactly, it's all for the greater good. That's how we decided.
Okay, so it's your fault, basically.
Yeah, essentially.
Okay, so how did you go about studying the transit time of a swallowed Lego head in paediatricians?
Well, we actually tried to be pretty scientific about it. What we wanted to do is we wanted to make sure that we had a standardized idea of what our stool transit time or our bowel motions were before we swallowed that Lego head. So we all kept a stool diary for 3 days before ingestion, noting number and consistency using a little Bristol stool chart we all had on our mobile phones.
Yep.
And then we all elected to, on a certain day, we would all swallow our Lego heads just after breakfast. So there were three in the UK and three of us in Australia. All swallowed our Lego heads. We videoed ourselves doing it just to prove
to
each other more than anything else that we were doing it rather than just, palming it or cheeking it. And then we essentially decided to have a look at our poos every single time they came out waiting for that head to appear.
And I bet that went down really well with partners and husbands and wives and those sorts of things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why Ben didn't want to get involved, because he was going to be on an aeroplane for most of the ingestion. Not a good move. And I know a lot of Grace was staying with her mum at the time, so I don't know how she explained she kept on nicking off to the toilet with a pair of chopsticks. I didn't tell my wife what I was doing at the time, so, I just taking the usual 10 minutes in the toilet, she didn't seem to notice any difference.
Right, okay. So what were your findings then? That sounds very wrong, saying it like that.
Yeah, so what we wanted to do is obviously measure the average stool transit time, the time to find and retrieve that Lego head. And the average time we calculated, and obviously there are only six of us involved, so small numbers, was 1.71 days. That was skewed a little bit because one of our team never found their Lego head.
Yes, this is Damien who's...
Well, I wasn't going to say that.
Everyone knows it was Damien.
An eminent professor of paediatric research in the UK was unable to find his Lego head. Now, it doesn't mean it's still inside him, of course. It means that he's just not very good at looking.
So some
insufficient his search strategy was obviously not as well thought out as everyone else's.
Yes. So when he dies, some poor pathologist's going to get a hell of a shock.
Well, I think what's more likely to happen is he's going to have a colonoscopy at 60, and they're going to see this little Lego head sticking out of a diverticulum somewhere, just staring out at them.
Yeah, smiling away. Okay.
Yeah.
And so 1.7 days. does that give us sort of useful information then to tell to parents?
I think the honest answer is no, not at all. You know, adults and children are very, very different in that children often have a much faster transit time for food than grown-ups. And certainly seeing the amount of speed that sweet corn comes out of my children, it seems to be a lot faster than 1.7 days. I think it is worth thinking that most, you know, Lego is an inert substance and doesn't seem to cause harm in adults that take it. And in the average 5 or 6-year-old, I think it's unlikely to cause any major problems.
Because this is something, you know, we see lots of kids who eat things and swallow things. And I've always taken the tack that, you know, don't waste your time looking for these things, because it's unlikely to cause any particular problems. And you must surely have better things to do with your life than sift through your child's feces.
And I think as long as the parents are fully aware of what their child has swallowed, that's great. I think the challenge then comes is if they think, was it, you know, 5, 10p, or was it something else that they swallowed? And I think obviously then I would be much more mindful of actually doing some investigations. You know, child has got something silvery in their mouth and swallows it, and if you don't know if it's a button battery or a coin, then you're going to absolutely must investigate.
Yeah. And in fact, our local guideline says that, you know, as we've got certain investigations if the, you know, the button battery hasn't passed, but it's the one thing that our guideline says that we do advise parents to look for are the button batteries as they come out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really important to make sure they're found. It's really interesting, though, because all the studies on coins found that 80% of the coins were found when they were looked for, so 20% weren't, and when the kids were x-rayed, those coins weren't present. So, again, I think it's really difficult. Parents have got to have a really good, proper hard look at if they're trying to look for button batteries if they have been swallowed.
So, okay, so you write, you do your research, you get your results, you write your paper, and where did you get, it got published in the Journal of Paediatrics and Child Health, is that right?
That's right, yeah. So we actually, the original idea was to try and get published in the Christmas BMJ.
Yeah.
Because we know they're, you know, after their amazing Peppa Pig paper of last year, we thought, well, you know, there's got to be some mileage in it. And we got rejected. But essentially because they don't publish papers performed on healthy subjects was the line they used. And then we submitted it a further 3 times to other journals and got rejected in each time. But we thought, you know, we've gone through with all this trial.
Not doing this for nothing.
We knew we were onto something. And so we took our last attempt. We submitted it to the Journal of Paediatrics and Child Health. And we got a great email back from David Isaacs, who basically said, "This is ridiculous. I'm going to publish it anyway." So, and, you know, there we didn't know anything more about it until a couple of weeks ago when it got the online edition got published. Tessa and I sent a couple of tweets out, and then within 24 hours, everyone was knocking at our door.
And it is probably, I would say, it's the most talked about paediatric paper of the year, realistically.
It's interesting. So, obviously, we can look at the back end of the altmetrics.
Yeah.
So I can see that it's been, other than, you know, the usual sort of FOMED type websites that puts a little bit out there, I sent a release to the University of Melbourne where I'm a honorary clinical lecturer. And their press office put out a press release and then it got picked up by the press. And so it's made it into pretty much every paper in the world within 24 hours. And because of that, every small newspaper in Australia had it, made it into the New York Post, the big papers in Australia, then travelled within the next 12 hours back over to England with the Daily Mail and the Metro and what have you, picking it up. And then within a couple of days, then it was all the local radio stations in Melbourne were, you know, asking for interviews. From us, so we did those, and then sort of satirical current affairs news program in Melbourne asked me to get on, so I did that.
Yep.
And you know, I must have done like 10 interviews in one day. And then that night, someone was flicking on the TV in New York, and they saw Jimmy Fallon had mentioned our paper in his opening monologue, which was quite a surprise. Obviously, it was a light news week for the world. And I think that's one of the reasons why it took off in Melbourne, to be honest, is because we just had elections, and everyone was pretty down on the whole thing. There wasn't much else going on, so everyone was just wanted something else to talk about. And rather than politics, so, and maybe that's why, you know, Brexit was obviously just too much for so many people. They thought, yeah, a bit of Lego swallowing fun, won't do anyone any harm.
But it really was incredible how widely this went. And as you say, you know, appearing on the late night show with James Corden and all those sorts of things. And that must have been a slightly surreal experience to think.
Oh, very much so. I mean, my parents who are non-medical, you know, don't obviously read medical journals, but they watch TV and read the newspaper. And to see their son mentioned as a researcher from Melbourne, obviously they know that's not what I really am. It was amazing, to be honest, although I have to admit it's quite hard to explain to them what I was really doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a very surreal experience, and it's given me a lot to talk about whenever I've been having chats with medical students or doing job interview stuff over the last few days. Yeah. Or writing end of year reports for people. It's given me a lot of mileage, should we say.
Absolutely.
But obviously, you know, now I've done it, I've got to be very careful that I don't become known as that bloke who swallowed a Lego head for science.
Well, that is, of course, is the danger, that the six of you, that's going to be your most notable achievement in your careers, isn't it?
But it will, to be honest. It's one of those things that, you know, we're certainly never going to forget, and most of our friends and family won't let us forget it either. But, you know, it's also been quite a good way in for just talking to a lot of other researchers who are doing normal research. You know, at least they've heard of us now, so, and it's really increased the sort of Don't Forget the Bubbles audience beyond just the standard sort of emergency physicians and paediatricians that have heard of us. It's got the name out to a lot more people, which is wonderful as far as we're concerned.
And I guess it sort of demonstrates the power of social media as well as the media in you know, Ken Mill talks about a lot is knowledge translation. And it shows the power of Twitter, for example.
Absolutely. And I think really without the sending out a few well-written tweets, it certainly wouldn't have gone as far as it did. And what's fascinating is I can see that, you know, looking at the altmetrics, so that's, you know, basically a publisher's idea of not citations, but the number of times the paper is being mentioned in various media. So whether that's on Reddit, Facebook, standard news channels, that sort of things. And we can see that of the 12 million papers that the altmetrics cover, we're currently tracking at sort of number 350.
Which is incredible.
Well, considering it's only been 10 days, I think it's absolutely amazing. But it also makes you wonder then how useful altmetrics are for actual valid science. You know, I mean, Damien put it really, really well that, you know, this is unlikely to be one of those papers that has huge numbers of citations unless we cite it ourselves in another paper in the future. But the altmetric scores are through the roof.
Yeah. and I did notice that there was a little bit of sniffiness maybe on Twitter about it. So, you know, this isn't proper science and they're very small numbers, but it wasn't intended to be that way, was it, really?
No, I think, you know, if we were trying to do this as serious science, I think it would have been very hard to get through the ethics committee for a start, trying to find a randomised, you know, if we wanted to make this serious science, we'd have to use children rather than adults. Now we need a much larger sample size than just the six of us. But this was never intended to be that. This was entirely intended to be a tongue-in-cheek article, really trying to actually raise a little bit of awareness of some issues. And I think to think that this was ever, to read this as a heavy serious science and put a evidence-based medicine spin on it, I think you'd kind of miss the point a little bit.
Yeah, I would completely agree. And I've recently seen on Twitter that the Lego heads have been made into key rings for the participants. Actually, please tell me they're not the
Lego
head. Oh, thank God.
I must point out that I think I really hope no one's kept their Lego head. I really hope they haven't. No, these are very much shop-bought fresh ones that have been given out to people.
That's really reassuring from a health and safety point of view.
Yeah.
So what's next then? Have you got anything else lined up?
So is it one of the best things about working with the Don't Forget Bubbles team is that we've always got ideas on the go. So we've always got one or two papers that we're writing, and most of the time they're serious things. So, you know, we've got a couple that are in submission at the moment that will hopefully get published in the new year. I don't think this is the sort of thing we're ever going to be able to replicate, and we shouldn't really try to be honest. Mm. So now, after the sort of Christmas break, we're mainly going to be focusing on finishing off a couple more papers that we've been asked to do, and then full steam ahead, ready for the conference next year.
Okay. And for those, again, not aware, that's the Don't Forget the Bubbles is coming to London, which I think a lot of people in the UK are very, very happy about.
Yeah, so is my wife, so we can go and visit the family at the same time. So that's quite nice.
Excellent. So, well, thank you, Andy. I really appreciate that for taking some time. And I was going to ask Father Christmas for some Lego, but I think I might just give it a miss this year.
I'm really worried about what I'm going to get at Christmas. It's one of the challenges is to explain to my children when they saw me on TV what I was actually doing there, because I don't want them to copy my ideas and start swallowing Lego heads. It's like when you go to work and I don't know if it's the same with your lot, but they ask you what you've done and what you've seen at work today. So I never tell them I've taken something out of someone's nose or someone's ear, because I know that for them, they're quite young. It's not a concept they've even thought about. So I don't really want to introduce the idea.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your time, Andy. We really appreciate it. And I wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas.
Thanks, Ian. Take care.
Okay, thank you.